So, moving through the criminal justice system, a case has now been filed with the court, and a judge has become involved in the matter. So here to talk about the rapid referral program, not the rapid intervention community court, the rapid referral program are three folks. Max Schluter, who will talk about his evaluation, because this is an evidence-based program. Annie Ramnasiyanu is the Associate Executive Director of Spectrum Youth Services in Burlington. She will talk about her involvement with the Rapid Referral Program. And Judge Brian Grierson is a Superior Court judge serving presently up in Chittenden County. And we will be fortunate enough to hear from Judge Grierson again later this afternoon. But here this morning to talk about the Rapid Referral Program, three folks, please welcome them.
You can reserve judgment on whether you're fortunate enough to hear from me twice today or not. We'll wait till the end of the day. I have to say that when I sat down with Annie at the table this morning, the first thing I said to her was, "Where's Max?" Because I can tell you for myself and probably some other speakers, when Karen called me and said, "Will you serve on this panel?" I said yes, having no idea what I was getting into. But being here today and seeing the numbers of folks that are here and the diversity, it's just a wonderful experience, and it's my pleasure to be able to appear here and try to tell you what we do in Burlington, but more importantly, what I really think can be done literally in any court in the state. The fact that there are so many people here with so many different interests, obviously we can all learn from each other, and I think the two concepts I hope you'll take away from this are those mentioned by the governor as well as Bobby Sands. Early intervention, and the only way that works is through collaboration with who's ever providing in your community. I'm really here kind of as a designated hitter, and I say that because any of a number of judges who sit in Burlington could be here to tell you about this program. But I would be remiss if I didn't begin by acknowledging, I don't think he's here, a retired Judge Ben Joseph, who really was instrumental, if not the driving force, behind starting rapid referral or bench referrals, it's sometimes referred to, in Burlington in, I think it was 2008 or 2009. Judge Joseph had the foresight, the vision to really get a hold of these concepts of early intervention and collaborative process and working with Annie. In its simplest terms, rapid referral or bench referral, I said we're all going to learn from this process. I now understand that what I'm truly doing here, I represent the third intercept, or as someone else referred to it as, I represent the hideous court system. So this is the face of the hideous court system, and we'll go from there. But when I talk about early intervention, before the whole session started, of course, Bobby was out there talking with everyone, and as I was going by him, he was talking with someone, and I'm not really sure what they were talking about, except he said, "It's like voting in Chicago, early and often." And quite frankly, that's what substance abuse and addressing those issues is all about. And that's what the rapid referral system is. Every time we talk about early intervention, and I think the governor referred to it as early investment, it's wherever you are in the process. And obviously the first speakers in the community with the police before arrests, they're trying to intervene at that point. TJ and his program with Rick is trying to intervene before they come into this hideous court system. But if those systems fail, we're here. We truly are a court of last resort. When those folks come in, our job in the rapid referral program is to identify those people that are coming before us with substance abuse, Some of the cases are simple and obvious. DWIs, drug charges, drug possession, home invasions. The governor mentioned his friend had his property stolen out of a car. Break-ins in car, all of that, the underlying issues are substance abuse. But it also takes folks to look at these cases as they come in and recognize how far substance abuse has impacted on our lifestyle and the people that are coming before you. And an example of that is a 19-year-old young man who came into court. The charge was stealing, I think it was checks or forging checks that belonged to his father. He's still at home. His father was still supportive of him. And there's not a word in that affidavit about drugs or drug use or anything else. And I ordered the bench referral for a screening and assessment, and the defense attorney correctly said, well, Judge, there's no mention in that affidavit of drugs or drug use. And I said, you're right. He's 19 years old. He's stealing from his family. And his family still supports him. Those three things suggest there's a substance abuse issue. You can ignore it, or you can accept that that's probably what's happening in order a bench referral for screening and assessment. In its simplest terms, what we do with those cases is to order a screening and assessment. With the collaborative effort of Spectrum Youth Services and the Howard Center, we have set up a program. There is nothing high-tech about what we do. Any court can do this. I have a calendar in front of me with designated slots for appointments with either Spectrum or Howard, and as that person comes in, we give them the date and time to appear for screening and assessment. Anyone dealing with individuals involved with substance abuse will understand that you can't tell them, go get an assessment. They will not do it. If that assessment is across the street, tell them where it is. They will not go there. If you give them a date and time and you follow up on it, you will get them assessed. And that is all we do. I issue a simple order that says you appear on this date and time, either with Annie or at Howard Center. We communicate. That's the other word you're hearing a lot about today. If that individual does not appear at that time, Annie will let us know. I will be seeing that person again anyway, and we will give them a new date. We do this as a condition of release. The bail statutes allow us, in any case where we feel it's appropriate, to order a screening and assessment. And I would have to confess that probably until Ben Joseph started this program, that a lot of us did not utilize that condition. But that's the authority for doing this. These assessments and screenings are confidential. We don't really care with the program they're doing. We want them to go there and get that process started. That's really what we see our objective is. Early intervention, get them started. What they do with that remains to be seen. But we will find out eventually, either at the time of the case is resolved, whether they have participated in the process. So in its most simple terms, that's what it is. It's recognizing as early as we can, the judiciary, that this is a person that needs at least an assessment to find out the extent and depth of that problem. And then the system will go from there, whether they are appropriate for drug treatment courts, which you're going to hear about later this afternoon, or not, remains to be seen. But the whole idea is that early intervention, early assessment. When I say that this can be done in any court, in other courts that I have worked in, it starts with that the idea that something needs to be done, and to work collaboratively with the people in your community. In Burlington, we're fortunate because of the resources of not only Spectrum but the Howard Center. But when you go into your own community, there are resources there. There's the old adage, if you build it, they will come. I have found in my experience on the bench as a judge, if you call that meeting, they will come. So you've got to identify who you want there. But when we were in Barrie, We got the local Washington County Substance Abuse Services to set up a program in the courthouse on day of arraignment for screening and assessment. You know, it took a while, but it was that simple. It's still going on. That's the first step. In Hyde Park, when we were up there, I found that there was a representative from the local substance abuse community who literally was there every day on arraignment. And when I finally found out who he was and what he was there for, we took advantage of that and said, okay, folks that are coming in on arraignment day, go see him. Make an appointment. If we can take that first step, that's what this process is all about. So you can do that in your communities. You can do that in any court that we're sitting in. You just have to meet those people, come up with a system that works in your court, and it will work. Thank you.
So I have two words for you. Burning desire. Judge Joseph and I both had a burning desire to make a difference and to change what we were seeing in our community in Burlington. I've been at Spectrum for 17 years, and over the course of my career there, I have watched the community be overrun by opiates, as we all know. Judge Joseph found out that Spectrum had been involved in through a department of, I think it was a DOJ grant, to implement an evidence-based model called NIATX, which basically helps healthcare systems open access to individuals seeking that care. So on-demand treatment. When he found out that we were engaged in that process of building that kind of a system, we got together over Christmas week, so this was a pretty big sacrifice for both of us, and started to develop the basics of what Judge Grierson has just discussed. It really works because people have immediate access. We know from the science of NIATX and that treatment improvement model that if you provide an appointment within 72 hours of the request, that the outcomes are exponentially better, the engagement is better, and everything in that individual's life stands to improve dramatically. So we changed our entire clinical process to have the open slots that Judge Grierson mentioned. And during the first 3 years, we saw several hundred people. We provided not only an assessment, but an evidence-based assessment. All of the clinical services at Spectrum rely on research. We are actually now engaged in a 5-year study with the Dartmouth Medical School. We have been identified as their treatment research center, and we are employing a National Institute of Health grant, double-blind clinical randomized trial. Our staff receive over 5 hours of videotaped supervision a week, ensuring that they are implementing these models to their best of their ability. So needless to say, the people in Burlington are very lucky, the community is very lucky that we have this partnership and are able to offer this level of intervention. That being said, beyond the assessment, the evidence-based practices that we use have been validated for this population, are compatible with the ORAS, which the staff are also trained to use. We use objective testing, urine screens at every session. And as I said, obviously the supervision is superlative. The results that we have seen are astronomical, and Max is going to discuss that further. But it really was through driving curiosity that we embarked on this project with Judge Joseph and Judge Grierson and the other judges in District Court in Burlington. And we had absolutely no idea whether or not, even though this is the best gold standard treatment, whether it was really going to make any kind of difference at all. So Judge Ben Joseph said to me, Annie, you've got to talk to Max. You don't know Max. And I said, no, I don't. So we at Spectrum decided to pay for the evaluation, as Judge Grierson has mentioned. No extra dollars were involved in any of these activities at all. We used our existing Medicaid dollars. We used existing substance abuse block grant dollars as a preferred provider within the Department of Health system. The judges used their existing resources, the court clerk, and really reshifting and investing their own time in a different way to help with this process. and then we footed the bill for the evaluation. So I really closed my eyes, praying. And when I got that phone call from Max, I literally fell off of my chair and onto the floor of my office, because the results were way beyond anything that anybody had ever imagined. Pushing forward, we decided that that still wasn't enough because we had not used a norm group for comparison. So we paid again. We kept paying and paying. The state, I should write a bill to the state of Vermont to get reimbursed for this. Anyway, so the second study was produced, and the results were even more astronomical. So we began to push this information out to the legislature, and we are in dialogue right now with Doug Racine and many others, and TJ included, to take a look at all of these homegrown Vermont products and see what we can do to benefit the whole state of Vermont. So without further ado, I'm going to let Max, who really is the one to deliver the punchline here, show us what we did.
Drum roll, please.
Drum roll. I mean,
talking about setting things up.
I'd like to talk to you about honey. And not because it has anything to do with the evaluation presentation, but to say that as a sideline, I keep bees, and I have a little present here, a little reward, a little charm or something. So remind me to negative. Remind me to get back to that. Okay, we have a little. Well, you know, do we have? What are we going to do on time? Where's our timekeepers? Oh. Okay. I think I went backwards. Or something's going on here.
There's the forward and the backward on the buttons.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it would help to turn it in the right direction. Does Rick work? Yes. Now let's move on to something else. Sorry.
I can advance here.
No, I'm good. Here we go. We're there. Okay. And this guy is you're trusting with evaluations. It's a scary thought. Okay. So here's the scoop. Does the rapid referral program work? It's great to be an evaluator because we get to ask this question. And this is a question that should be foremost in all of our minds because it's the question that your funders are asking. It's the question that the legislature is asking, the Department of Corrections is asking if your services are paid for through them. It's what DCF is asking. It's what the feds want. It's what private foundations want. And that's why this is a question that if you're not asking it, you should be asking it. And that's what the honey Well, I'll ask this question right now. Okay, here it is. For 1 pound of fresh, organic, unprocessed honey from Bluter bees, how much does it cost to conduct a outcome evaluation? Oh, come on.
We have to turn the lights off. We have to heat the heater. How much does it cost to conduct outcome evaluation?
25,000.
25,000. Good. 50. 50? Even better.
0.
25, right? That's what you would think, right? But actually, you were right. The cost for an outcome evaluation, because the state of Vermont underwrites this cost, is $2,000. So you ought to be thinking about this, because I think most of you could find $2,000 a year.
How come I didn't get that rate?
Because you helped develop the technology to reduce the cost for others.
I should get the hard.
Okay, so we get to ask this important question. All right, so what we're really interested here is not the number of people they served, not whether people felt better as a result of their treatment, not whether they had better urine tests. The question we really wanted to ask was, what was the post-program behavior of the persons who went through this program compared to a control group? So this is a little bit different than what we did for Rick. It's really sort of the next step up. And so what we did was we looked at 171 program participants and 394 controls, that is to say people who had no contact with the program at all. We looked at them from the period of 2008 to 2011, and we measured success as being no conviction for any criminal offense. Now, I have to hand it to Annie and the crew. They didn't kind of... Is that me? I guess that is me. They didn't sort of say, well, you know, let's not include motor vehicle offenses. You know, let's kind of ignore DLS. Let's kind of ignore probation violations. This is black and white. You're in, you're out. You are reconvicted of an offense or not. So this is a really tight criteria, and I have to hand it to them for taking the high road on this. Before we get into the results, let me just 2 seconds on the design. The control group concept, what we're trying to do there is take the rapid referral clients who have the sweater on the left, and then take a group of controls, that is to say people who were never part of this program, and make them look exactly like the sweater on the left. So if you'll see, both groups are exactly identical. The group on the left is the rapid referral. The group on the right is the control group. That is to say, they look just like the other guys. They went through the same court. They went through the same judges. They had the same prosecutors handling their cases. They're the same, except for one thing. One group went through the program and the other group didn't. So the logic here is this. If the two groups are identical, any difference in recidivism is due to the program. So now, the drum roll. Oh, no, I'm sorry. So here's the variables that we matched on. So we looked at 15 different variables that dealt with the demographics of both of these people. How old were they? What was their gender? When were they first convicted? What was the nature of the offenses? What did their rap sheets look like? And we matched these people up so that within some variation, these two groups looked exactly the same. Now the results. Okay, here it is. 81% of the people who went through the rapid referral program remained conviction-free during the study period versus an exactly identical group, only 16%. So in terms of traditional recidivism language, that's a difference sort of between 9% recidivism and 84% recidivism. And you might say, holy cheekers, how can you have people with an 84% recidivism rate? We never heard of that. Think about who this population is. Young, private offenders, drug and alcohol related, they are a high risk group. So the advantage of using the control group was we were able to match these two groups together and we could see, as Annie already said, some pretty extraordinary results. Now the big question is, well, what's the difference between these two groups? And the difference is 65% less recidivism for people who are running through this program. And as I sort of whizzed by in the RICC program, the RIC program, this means that there are potentially 65% less arrests, 65% less arraignments. Now, does that mean 65% more in the taxpayer's pocket? No, it probably doesn't mean that. But what it does mean is maybe the courts, what was it again, the hideous courts?
Hideous courts.
Those hideous courts could reduce some of their backlog. What it could mean is the Department of Corrections perhaps can bring some offenders back from out of state. What it means, the probation officers could have a little bit lower case numbers. What it could mean is that police departments are not focusing so much on arrest, but they're focusing on prevention. So these are opportunity costs. And again, I think what's really important is as we look at this data is we don't think exclusively in terms of hitting a number, but we want to think about cost-benefit analysis. Just as sort of a future sort of thing, the center is leading an effort to develop the first comprehensive cost-benefit model in the state of Vermont. And hopefully in January, we'll be making a presentation to the legislature such that we will know how much it costs to arrest, prosecute, defend, adjudicate, and correct defendants for 7 different types of crimes. We'll know this for both adults and juveniles, and we also will know the cost to victims in terms of criminal justice. So this drives these evaluation issues home even harder. So how do you explain the results? Well, you might have remembered I said this right at the beginning. If the two groups are identical, any difference is due to the program. And so I would just simply conclude by saying that the rapid referral program obviously is a winner, because the only difference between those two groups was that they participated in the program. So read the full report. It's on www.vcj.r.org. You might also want to subscribe to our blog. It's a good way of kind of keeping up to date in terms of what's going on. Thank you very much for helping us try to keep the lights on at Vermont Center for Justice Research. And questions, or did you have anything else?
Questions.
Let's take about 5 minutes worth of questions.
Yes, I'm curious to know, do you, or were you able to analyze why some cases were referred and others were not, and whether that was a factor in the difference in recidivism rates?
Not in this study. This was a preliminary analysis. Something like that would be handled in large part in a process evaluation, which maybe we're going to do, because it's really the next step. The process evaluation handles those kinds of issues and then sets the program up for replication, because you really need to know what it is about the program that works before you want to replicate it. But that's an excellent question.
Absolutely. Which goes to my question. Seeing that this costs zero money, other than the evaluation costs, which are minimal, and as Judge Gerson said, if there is leadership in the criminal justice community in a particular jurisdiction, how difficult is it to replicate this program in all 14 counties? And why, if it is as indicated here, relatively easy, why has it not yet happened?
Well,
thanks, Robert.
I'm not sure any of us can answer that.
It's not our question. I think
it could be replicated in some form. It depends on the resources that are in that community, and not everyone has the benefit of an organization as large as Spectrum and the Howard Center. But in your individual communities, I think a program similar to this, where you start with a referral from the bench, what form it would take, I'm not sure.
Robert?
Going back to Annie's first comment, when you and Judge Joseph got together, you had, what was the current, driving passion? Burning passion.
Burning desire.
Burning desire. Hideous court, burning desire.
You know, I had to offer a contrast to hideous court.
Thank you.
So,
thank you.
Can you speak to that, Annie?
I can. I mean, this is going to be alphabet soup for some of you, but I'll spell it out. We use the global assessment of individual needs. That is the assessment tool. In addition to the evaluation that Max offers, Chestnut Health Systems, which developed that assessment, offers technical assistance on an ongoing basis, and they also analyze all of our data from using that tool, which is web-based. Number two, that obviously drives the treatment plan, but is still client-centered. The treatment of choice at Spectrum is cognitive behavioral therapy and motivational interviewing therapy in the form of MET-CBT 5 through 12. That stands for Motivational Enhancement Therapy, Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. It's a curriculum for substance abuse reduction developed at the University of Connecticut by Dr. Susan Sample. We also use mindfulness and other evidence-based practices. I would say that is absolutely replicable. It takes commitment and rigor to learn these therapeutic techniques and to stick to them. It is about rigor and sustainability. As I said before, we used all existing dollars. This is, Robert, you were the one that pointed out when I testified to TRICHAIR that this was really nothing special. And I said, thank you, Robert. It is special in that the results were special. What was special was we used compression. We combined Niatex treatment on demand with this sequence of events, with tight coordination with Judge Grierson, so that there were no loopholes. But there were carrots.
Let's take one last question.
The morning's program has had a lot of demand reduction programs. Is there any evidence that it's reduced the supply of drugs coming into our communities, or must we consider changes in the criminal law itself?
There's no way of doc. I can't imagine that it has, but that's just my opinion, which
we've got the major
Well, I don't know that he could measure the amount of drugs coming in.
I can do that.
Sorry.
Superman.
Just, I'll have it for you after lunch.
Big pot of honey for that, Kim.
Judge, are you...
Said, no, I
was just going to say, that's a fabulous question, and one of the things that the center is trying to address is to help other organizations to come up with measures for success. You know, typically, as I think it was Chief Baker early on said, well, we used to measure things in terms of how many arrests, how much dope did we bring in, so forth and so on. We need to think about different kinds of measures, and we're going to be doing some training this spring for which will be free and open to criminal justice agencies and service providers on how to do that. So, for example, as a measurement of drug reduction, maybe we need to look at how many overdoses are reported by the coroner. Is it up or is it down? How many overdoses are reported by the emergency rooms? What's your absentee levels looking like at high school, and so forth and so on, so that we can sort of really look at community health as indicators for these other sorts of issues. So it's on the radar, and yeah.
Judge Annie Max, thank you so much for your presentation.